Finally, we are just 2 days away from the Browns and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting after it at First Energy Stadium. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Joe Jurevicius in the Dog Bowl in Berea for the next 2 hours to break this game down for you. And it's Friday, so obviously it's Call Your Shot Friday. We want to hear from you. Call Your Shot. What happens with the Browns and the Buccaneers? And also, whose player we need stock up and step up? What player's stock is up going into the Tampa game? What player needs to step up going into this Tampa Bay Buccaneers game? But really, this is a show for you guys. We're going to get into our breakdown of this game as well. We hopefully will be hearing from Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times at 1:45. Mary Kay Cabot will be with us at 2:15. Dakua for a little Friday forecast around 2:30 on a sad day for the Blue. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. Gentlemen, how are we doing here on this Friday?
Doing all right, man. Good to be good to get through a week. Obviously 2 days away from game day, and a great atmosphere in the city of Cleveland yesterday, for sure. Obviously, a win would have been great, but didn't happen. But there's only 81 more games to go.
That's right, and I'm excited. As much as the hype was centered around the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron's return, I enjoyed that. I tuned in to watch the introduction in the first quarter, just like I talked about yesterday, and I kind of tuned out and meandered over to Florida State Louisville, which was a good game for a while, and then also New Orleans Carolina to get my little NFL football fix, but. I'm excited. It's Friday. We wrap our show. We give our forecast, and we look forward to another Browns victory this Sunday.
Certainly looking forward to it, because the Browns have an opportunity in their first eight games this year to win more games than they did all of last season, going 5-3 if they get this W against the Tampa team that we talked about comes in to this game ranked dead last in offense and dead last in defense. So this is hopefully a good matchup for this team to kind of get it going. And I mean, especially offensively. The last 2 weeks, a little bit stagnant offensively, and I know, Joe, you think that the cover two that Tampa will play is going to be very good for Brian Hoyer, this receiver group, for the because of the way Kyle Shanahan kind of schemes. It's a good matchup with his defense.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing here is Kyle in 2004, 2005 was part of the whole Tampa thing. So he's very familiar with this Tampa two coverage, and he's going to know how to exploit it. But I would say the thing when you're doing a Tampa two coverage and you're an offense going up against it, you've got to be very meticulous about what you're doing. You've got to keep your head on a swivel. You've got to find the holes. You've got to sit down. You've got to be disciplined. So if we can do that against a Tampa defense that right now is not doing very well, I think it bodes really well for us.
When you look at this Tampa team, why is their defense struggling so much in your mind?
Well, I think it's like we've seen with all the other teams, the Jacksonvilles, the Oaklands, and now the Buccaneers. And what we've seen here kind of in the past in Cleveland ourselves is there's been so much change. Learning new schemes, trying to fit guys in, guys getting familiar with Lovie Smith. So I don't think change is sometimes good, but when it consistently happens and you've got the coaching carousel coming through and different coaching staffs coming through, it's not very good for a team trying to win games.
Something that jumped out to me just, again, in studying Tampa, you know, both offensively and defensively on, you know, NFL Game Rewind, it looks like you have a bunch of players – making plays, not a team making plays, at least on from a play to play, you know, a series to series basis. And you might look at it like, well, how do you find that out? And it just looks like a single guy makes a play and a single guy celebrates that play, and everybody else kind of meanders back to the huddle, where you see, you know, what Coach Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill, you know, when you talk about the dog collars and that reward system, which we can get to at some point, it's, they're passionate about celebrating with each other. You know, when Gilbert made the pass breakup, you know, Screen and Hayden, you know, were the first ones to get over him, to give him, you know, the high five, the pat on the butt, whatever it might be. Dansby wants to celebrate with his teammates. You know, Kruger walks off into the distance after a sack, and his teammates are, you know, batting him on his head, jumping on his back. They're having fun. And that seems to me what the problem is. You know, it's a new system, yes, but it's a bunch of good players making plays, but they're not playing as a team.
When you see a team like Tampa that you go down their roster and you see offensively Vincent Jackson, you see Mike Evans, Doug Martin, the former first round pick, they bring in Logan Mankins. There are a lot of big names there. Defensively, you've got, you know, Gerald McCoy, now the highest paid defensive tackle in the league. You've got Levante David. You've got Deshaun Goldson, Altron Werner. You see a lot of names, and yet it seems like, I keep saying this, the whole is less than the sum of its parts right now in Tampa. What does that say to you guys about the coaching that's happening there? And also, is that something that speaks highly to a lack of buy-in? Because I think everything you're saying, Matt, about Mike Pettine and the way things are happening here, and he talks about all the time, is that the thing that he's most proud of is the genuine buy-in from the players. Are they not buying into what Lovie Smith's doing?
That might be it, yes. And I just think that it's, you know, it's a true transition year there. I don't know if expectations were extremely high for Tampa Bay going into the season. You know, it's always tough with a new head coach, and when a new head coach brings a new system, it's going to take time. And we've seen our own personal trials and tribulations. Yeah, our offense took off and ran the ball extremely well, and we were able to throw the ball down the field with play action. But look at the other side of the ball. You know, it was weeks and weeks before our defense finally, you know, we realized how to fix our problems, what issues to address. Was it the scheme? Was it the players? Was it overcomplication? And we figured that out over the course of time. And again, to me, it may be a little bit of a disconnect there, you know, with Lovie and his staff, because you want to build a relationship between player and coach, you know, and there's got to be a mutual amount of respect and communication. And that is something that, again, with the transparency that Coach Mike Pettine has, we get that as analysts, the media gets it, and you know if he's giving it to us, he definitely has it inside that locker room, and that may be a missing element that Tampa Bay has going on down there.
The interesting thing, too, guys, is Greg Schiano was there before Lovie, right?
Yep.
And I know from my time down in Tampa when I would spend some time there in the offseason and be around the facility that Greg Schiano kind of set a precedent there that it was very military-like. Like, it was hard and fun to go to work. And I think that a lot of guys now, you get rid of him, and Lovie's known as a player's coach. He's very good at what he does. He's had a lot of success, you know, in other places as coordinator, head coaching. Now he's in Tampa, and, you know, it's a hard sell. Guys were probably excited that Greg was gone because, again, you don't have to worry
about
it.
Basically had a mutiny on
him. Right. It was really – I mean, and that's not very good for a team. But I would say that when you have a coach that's got a new system, bringing in his own guys, there is an adjustment period. And we're all familiar with it, that if you've got to deal with that as a player – there's a little bit of adjusting to. These coaches are going to find out who they like. The scouting departments, we talked some about that earlier today off show. But there's an adjustment period, and I think it's a really, really big challenge right now. I mean, Tampa has history, but right now the recent history has been not a very good one.
And what does it mean in the locker room? Take me, guys, inside there, because this is a team – that had even more stars. And Lovie Smith comes in and he blows out Darrell Revis. You know, you don't fit the cover two. We're not paying you. You're out. Bring in Altron Werner. But here you are at 1-6. You got Mark Barron, who was the 7th overall pick in the NFL draft. And in the middle of the season, you trade him for a couple future picks. Does that say to the guys in the locker room, like, F it, they don't care about this season anymore. Why should I care?
I don't know if they say that, because you would hope that as a paid professional that, you know, you've got to do your job regardless. It's hard. I mean, if you become a free agent, you might be a little more apt to leave. But the adjustments, you know, it's hard for me to look at a team getting rid of Darrell Revis, because to me, he's the best as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he is a shutdown cornerback, and any time you get rid of a guy like that, whether it's for salary cap reasons or whatever, he's a guy that I would rather play with, because when you have a guy like him, your chances of winning games go up. But again, maybe you're right. Maybe sometimes players look at it that way. I never did. I just always tried to worry about my
professional.
I always had to worry about my job. You know, I mean, you can only control what you can control. You can't worry about what the front office or what coaching staffs are saying.
And then the flip side of that would be that you're looking at, I had no problem cutting Darrell Revis, had no problem trading Mark Barron, that you have to show up or you're going
to
be gone.
Yeah, you're right. And I think in my eyes, just to answer your last question, is I do believe that it affects the locker room when you trade, you know, contributors. Because they not only traded Barron, but they traded, you know, Casillas as well.
Yeah.
So they, you know, a linebacker who started the first three games of the season had since lost his starting position to another player, and a safety, and I think second leading tackler on the team,
yes,
just got traded away. And it's not like they traded away for other players; they traded away for picks. So in some ways, they're kind of conceding in my eyes, because we're not getting considerably better. I think if you do anything, you step backwards, you know, and your eyes immediately go towards the future when picks, you know, for players are traded the way they were.
You know where I was confused earlier in the season with the Buccaneers is when Lovie came in and he named McCown the starting quarterback early in the season. He was going to be their quarterback moving forward, and that to me was almost like, is that really a household name who you're going to build a franchise off of? And that's not to take away from them, but it was a different thing. You're already, maybe they're just trying to put their guys in place, but it was a question mark for me early on, like, wow, you know, Glennon was doing okay last year, considering he didn't have the talent around him receiver. He's got one extra weapon. Now, all of a sudden, you're bringing McCown in, and it was a little bit head.
Well, but Lovie has the experience of Josh McCown, you know, leading that Chicago Bear defense, or offense, I'm sorry, and winning football games there in Chicago with Lovie. And then I think also, too, is you've, like we might see a little bit here if you've thrown some money at Josh McCown too. You know, you've got Glennon on a rookie deal, paying him $500,000 maybe, and you've given multiple millions of dollars to Josh McCown to come here in free agency. You know, you got to pencil him in as a starter, and I'm sure Lovey, in his mind, he thought he was doing something good for his organization and putting his eggs in the McCown basket, other than keeping a competition open for Glennon or McCown moving forward.
Yeah, and now they're kind of at the point where Glennon's the guy, and Josh McCown even says, you know, Glennon should be the guy. It's interesting, though, on their depth chart, they still have McCown listed first and Glennon listed second. But if you're looking at the future, you might as well see what you have. In Mike Glennon, right now, they have a guy who's been sacked 9 times the last 2 games. He's thrown an interception in each of the last 4 games. But there is some young talent there, and this line currently struggling mightily, and that's something that hopefully the Browns can exploit here. And coming off of last week's game against the Raiders, they had their best performance against the run after those first 2 nice runs from McFadden. They held them to 44 yards on 16 carries after that for their running backs. Is this another game, Matt, where you see the Browns able to stop the run? And if they can, I really think it's just going to set up very well for them to kind of pin their ears back and get after Glennon.
I definitely do, because, you know, Bobby Rainey, who, you know, a lot of Browns fans will recognize that name, is most likely going to be the starting running back. And he was more efficient last week. And again, continuing to study that Minnesota Vikings game, he was more efficient out of the backfield as a pass catcher than he was on the ground. But I will say also that in watching that game, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers know that they don't want Mike Glennon throwing the ball 30, 40, 50 times in a football game. So they are still a lot like the Browns, dedicated to running the football and doing their very best attempt at creating balance for the offensive football team. So, and also too, the Sims kid, they like potentially coming off of that injured reserve. Has he been activated at all? Are we aware of?
They are expecting to have him active this week, but they're going to ease him back. It has not been determined yet, but a very nice player out of West Virginia.
So therefore, and again, I think Doug Martin, again, missed practice yesterday. Whether he participates today or not, I don't know. He was in a walking boot as of yesterday. So we're not going to see a lot of Doug Martin. So that falls on the shoulders of Bobby Rainey. And then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are going to do everything they have to do to manufacture yards, manufacture first downs, because they will not beat the Cleveland Browns throwing the football 30, 40 times in a game.
And if that's the case, then you look at the number of touchdowns they've had rushing. It's 4 touchdowns rushing for the Buccaneers to 9. I mean, they're not going to do it either way. They're not going to run it in either, it doesn't look like right now. So
that's why they are struggling. They're averaging under 20 points a game.
They're struggling, all right. So if you look at what the Browns have going for them, 2-game win streak, back home, a chance to go into or take the Buccaneers out right now and be a couple games above 500, it's huge. It's really big right now. Momentum, I'm a firm believer, and Matt, you know, being a former player, when you start to put a string of wins together, you build a lot of momentum.
You want to go into this game Thursday night against Cincinnati after winning 2 and knowing that this is an opportunity to play for a division lead in the AFC North. I mean, it is massive to get this game.
It definitely is. And I think, again, we have another divisional game between the Ravens and Steelers. One of them is going to lose. And as long as we hold suit and continue to win football games, you know, very similar to the Ohio State Buckeyes, all we have to do is win and stay relevant and stay in the conversation. And I do believe as this team grows in confidence and we build continuity on that offensive line with McDonald and Greco back at his home spot at guard, Hoyer builds confidence. We'll eventually get Josh Gordon back, which will, you know, open up so many opportunities. We'll get Jordan Cameron back in the coming weeks, and a defense that is growing hungrier and hungrier every week. It's so funny to say this, but I had like a dream about this, and it's like the one word that popped in my head to exemplify this football team is fight. We are fighting for so many things, and so we're fighting to stay relevant. We're fighting to win football games, and in years past, when there was any type of adversity, we would back down and fall back to our old tendency, was just, we'll just be those Cleveland Browns and let everybody down and let ourselves down. This team is fighting, and it's easy to get behind these guys because they want to win. They are hungry, and it's a locker room full of competitors.
It's a locker room full of competitors, and point blank, we have to win this game because it's a game that we should win, and those are the games that we have to move forward on.
Yeah, and we'll go back and we'll look at, if you get this one like we all want to and we all expect the Browns to do, and we want to hear from you calling your shot at 216-578-0850, as well as someone you want to step up in this game and somebody whose stock is up in your eyes. You want to win this game as well because of the momentum, and as you talked about, winning what you're supposed to. We all looked at this 5-game stretch. This is where the Browns could really make some noise. And I still thought for a young team like this, 5-0 was probably still – you know, not attainable, but 4-1 was very good. And they have the opportunity this Sunday to hit that 4-1 mark in these five games and get to 5-3. Will it happen? Do you think it's going to happen? Let us know. 216-578-0815. Zagura, Wilhelm, Juravicious, just getting started on the Call Your Shot Friday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.